With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Whether you're a brand, large business, small business, or an individual, you need customers. And the chances are some of your potential customers are probably listening to this podcast right now. From history...
When Napoleon laid Boulogne for a year...
Politics...
If that person is poor, it's a bad neighbourhood. Then you have the disproportionate police brutality, which is meted out instantly at people of colour.
Culture...
Had they written it that Chris called an ambulance for hours straight away, and we wouldn't have learnt about the severity of alcohol withdrawal either. Well done to the writers. Thank you for making a wonderful podcast, but I'd give Rotherham a miss. Very.
The Rotherham Tourist Board.
Geekdom.
The flag is a graphic symbol, not a verbal symbol. You know, why don't we just write France on the flag? I mean, we laugh when you think of putting a country's name on a flag.
Society or music.
Young people began to turn away from their parents' ethics and their style of dress, and they began to dance to a new type of music.
Royfield Brown's podcasts are downloaded just under 100,000 times a month. So putting your message here could well be worth it. If you have something to sell or promote, why not email royfield@gmail.com and hear your product or service promoted.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
If country borders and grids can fascinate you, and state names intrigue you, if atlases, globes, city plans, subway maps, and of course, world maps are your thing, if you can name the capital city of Namibia, and if you get giddy about flags, you are in the right place. This is Map Corner, a podcast about the love of maps brought to you by Royfield Brown and Claire Asprey. Now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Map Corner. I'm Royfield Brown, who's 37.8 degrees north and 122.3 degrees west, which puts me back in my beloved Oakland in the Bay Area in California. And with me is Claire Asprey. And I'm guessing today, Claire, that you're again in East Bedfordshire.
I'm in North Bedfordshire. Yes, 52.1 degrees north, 0.5 degrees east.
Hold on a minute. Why have you written in your notes that you're in East? Oh, East in Bedfordshire. So what's the difference between North Bedfordshire and you writing East in Bedfordshire? Surely, if you're East in Bedfordshire, that's East Bedfordshire.
No, 0.5 degrees east, but I'm still in North Bedfordshire rather than East Bedfordshire. I'm more in West Bedfordshire, if that counts.
So basically, you don't know where you are according to what you've written on the script. Map Corner is a podcast dedicated to the love of maps and to all things cartophilic, folks. So if Peters is your projection, you're in the right place.
And this month, we're talking to Van de Graaff, who's a YouTuber who likes to talk about maps and has some really interesting content on his channel.
We have an audio postcard from our stalwart contributor and quiz winner, Ken McDonald. Don't forget, folks, to review us on Apple iTunes. The more people that review us and the more great ratings we get, the more people get to listen to the show.
And again, we're live recording this on Zoom. with some of our favourite Map Corner listeners. It's great to see familiar faces and new faces. So if you want to join in next time we have a Map Corner recording, make sure to join our Facebook group where we post the link for the Zoom as an event.
You know, you says we're here with some of our favourite listeners. Generally, I say that Nick Roworth is my bête noir. I pretend that Nick and I have beef. Nothing could be further from the truth. Nick is just a lovely guy. But I've got beef with Andy Gladwin. He's not one of my favourite listeners. He impugned the city of my birth. Sarah Spilsbury, I know you're watching along. You're in Smethwick. That's part of Greater Birmingham.
Yeah.
How comfortable do you feel sharing a Zoom panel with Andy Gladwin? He basically said that Birmingham wasn't a place worth going to.
Oh, that's very wrong.
There you go, Andy. In that opinion. You've been told, sir.
Can I maybe just suggest, though, in the mode of diplomacy, that maybe picking on the listeners isn't the best start to the show?
It's all camaraderie. It's all camaraderie.
It's starting to feel like bullying, Royfield.
Far be it from me to have an accusation of bullying thrown my way. We record every first Saturday of the month at 6 p.m. UK time, which is 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. And today we are interviewing Van de Graaff. Hello, Mr. Van de Graaff. How are you?
I'm doing well.
You are such a man of mystery, and you've added to that by not having your camera on, which I think, do you work for Mossad or the CIA or something? Are you why are you deep undercover, sir? I like it.
My videos are images based with my recording voice, so that's just what I do. That's how people know me, so I just keep doing it.
Well, obviously, we know you from YouTube. So why don't you take us back to the beginning? I presume you love maps. You decided to take your love of maps onto YouTube. When did all that start and why, sir?
As a kid, I would just draw maps a lot. And for YouTube, I would make some very bad, poorly drawn videos like math concepts on my other channel. But my other interest was geography and maps. So I decided to make an entirely new channel where I would make higher quality videos with maps. And the first one I made was about San Francisco, the Bay Area, and Silicon Valley, explaining the difference between those three concepts and how they overlap.
And when would that have been? Because you've been on YouTube for quite some time. So set us chronologically when that was.
That was, I think, 4 years ago in 2016. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to see how these things that people take as geographical shorthand, I find it really interesting to watch that video because we might have a mental concept of what those places are and what those areas are. And Royfield might be different as well because he actually lives in that area. To see it laid out like that is quite interesting. And I think you could probably do that for lots of sort of regions and areas which people use as shorthand. So, did it take a lot of time to put together?
It was a long time ago, but I'm remembering that it took me, I was working on it for quite a while. The animations, I had to do every single frame as a different image. So that took a while.
Let me just understand exactly what you're trying to achieve there. So one of the videos which I saw that you did was the concept of the Middle East. And I'm guessing that this one's similar in that this is a case of we have the Bay Area as a concept. And then we have San Francisco, and then we have Silicon Valley. And it's a way of understanding how we categorize geographical places and how these can actually overlap. Is that it in a nutshell? So that you were looking at with your first
video? Yeah. For the Middle East video, I was trying to do the same thing, where it was like there's three overlapping concepts. One of them was the Middle East. The other one was concept of the Arab ethnicity, which is similar to the Middle East, but it's overlaps somewhat with there's Arabs in North Africa, and not every single person in the Middle East is an Arab. And the other one was the religion of Islam, which is associated with the Middle East. But again, it's some of the people in the Middle East are Muslim, but there's also people who are Muslim outside the Middle East. And there's people in the Middle East who aren't Muslim. So I was trying to like do those three concepts, how they overlap, and explain the situation where they are not the same thing. Like, for instance, Persians are not Arabs.
Mm-hmm. One of the kind of fascinating things for me, loving history, then obviously also geography, was that the concept of where the Middle East is has actually moved, hasn't it, historically? Yeah. So India, let's say 100 plus years ago, was actually the Middle East, and there was the Far East, which was China, and actually what we now call the Middle East was the Near East.
The Ottoman Empire was the Near East, the Far East was China. In between, could have, anywhere in between could have been the Middle East, although the first Middle East was more a little bit to the side of India. The British were the ones who sort of, for their strategic purposes, they created the concept of the Middle East for the area that was to the west of India, because they controlled their colony in India. And the importance of the region was for defending their concept of India. Like, for instance, there's the Great Game, mm-hmm. with Russia, was over what could be considered the Middle East. And it was in their attempt to keep it away from the Siberian territories of Russia that they decided the Middle East was important. And so the concept of the Middle East evolved out of that, as when the Americans and the British were cooperating in the Second World War, they called their command in that area the Middle East Command. And that's how it sort of absorbed the concept of the Near East, was through the Second World War, which is a very important war for describing things, and as people became familiar with areas they wouldn't have been familiar with before. And that continued as certain events would create more importance, like, for instance, the Suez Crisis and the oil crisis, with the OPEC would increase the price of it by restricting the supply.
Yeah. So let's go back to what you do on YouTube, because you've built up a lot of subscribers. You've got a very big channel there. You talked about you doing animation. So take us through the process of you've decided on a concept, whether that is explaining the Middle East and the overlapping concentric kind of, like, you know, circles of ethnicity and geography, etc., or the Bay Area. Take us through your process. How long does it take you to get the finished output? What do you do? Because I wasn't aware that you were animating frames individually as well. So just take us through that technical process.
Okay, so the first thing you need to do, I do, is I try to get a script. That can take quite a while. Probably the most time is writing the video. After you've written the video, I will edit a few times. I'll read it out, make sure I'm not saying weird things that don't make sense. And then I will record it. And that's my least favorite part, because I don't like hearing my own voice. After that, you have to edit the video. You have to edit the audio so that it get rid of your ums and ahs and weird pauses when you don't know what you're saying. And then when you have the audio in sequence, in the proper sequence, everything good, then what you do is you need to put the images behind the audio. And so you need a video editing software. And basically, what I'm making is essentially a slideshow where my voice is just running next to the slideshow.
Well, you're on YouTube and you've got a lot of views and a lot of subscribers. What are your most popular videos, and why do you think those videos in particular are your most popular?
The Weird Borders series is my most popular, and specifically it's the Weird State Borders. And the reason for this is it was a popular topic when people like CJ Gray did it, and I was sort of like trying to expand on what he did, because he did it many years, like 10 years ago or something. He made a video called Bizarre Borders, and I thought the concept was interesting, so I wanted to expand that on different borders than he was doing. The U.S. state borders is most popular because the United States is a large country and people generally have more interest in their own country. So there's probably a lot of Americans who wanted to see that. But the other one that also did successfully was the one about the exclaves, where, you know, how like Russia has that piece next to Poland. It's not connected to Russia. And so that one, I tried to do a theme where it's exclaves were created because countries wanted to get access to the sea, and so they cut off parts of one country from the other. So, for instance, Poland cut off two pieces of Germany, and then during the Second World War, Russia took that edge of East Prussia from Germany and got rid of the Germans and put in Russians. And the second one was how Angola has a little piece of it above Congo's connection through the Congo River to the ocean. And then the third one was how Bosnia and Herzegovina had a tiny little strip connecting it to the Adriatic Sea, and Croatia And so Croatia is disconnected from the rest of the country for a little bit.
And I've been there. I've been to that little Bosnian town. So Bosnia only has either 9 or 12 miles of coastline. And it was given to Bosnia, even though everybody basically there, the vast majority of people there actually are Croatian. They speak Croat. It was given to the province of Bosnia by Tito. I was in Dubrovnik. When you travel from Dubrovnik by coach to Sarajevo, you stop at the border, they take your passport, then you go 9 miles and you have to do the whole thing again. It's a wonderful anomaly. You look at the map of the Dalmatian coast and you literally cannot see. You think that Croatia goes all the way down, but no, there's this tiny little bit, which is actually Bosnia, which is now this international border.
Geographical curiosities that do really well in these sort of videos. We're fans of borders and enclaves and exclaves.
Yeah, the thumbnails are pretty good for those things, because like you can have like the arrows, the red arrow pointing at it, and be like putting question marks. Uh-huh. That makes it people want to click on it.
One video of yours which I did see, and you sent me down a rabbit hole, sir, for half an hour. So thank you for that. Was the exclave within an exclave? So it is the United Arab Emirates and Oman. And there is a bit of, away from the whole body of Oman, there's a little circle within the UAE, of which within that, there's another bit of Oman again. And just understanding, and that only came about in about 1970, and it's because local tribal allegiances were just so fluid. And, somebody, I forget how many miles away it is from the UAE proper, decided when it's case, right, we're going to be independent. You need to pick a side. He goes, I'll go with the Omanis. And they're just 100 miles down the road. And then somebody within that territory again said, well, I want to be part of the UAE. And it's just created this bizarre but wonderfully unique situation of enclave within an enclave, which is an exclave. Utterly fascinating. Yeah.
And if the United Arab Emirates was not united, there'd be so many more of those situations. Because the reason that's a particularly unique situation is because the Emirates, they have territory all over the place with no real rhyme or reason. There's a similar situation with Belgium and the Netherlands, where because of weird feudal arrangements or whatever, they have territory all over the place and nobody really knows why.
Yeah, I'd like to do a map corner field trip to that bit that's like all over the place, Belgium and the Netherlands. Quite keen to do a visit there.
Guy Smith, you've got your hand up there, sir. Jump in.
It's a bad time for enclaves. Just south of Vancouver, you've got Point Roberts, where the peninsula is cut off by the 49th parallel. It depends on us Canadians going down there for cheap gas, cheap cheese, getting your American parcels delivered to the post office box. And some people have cottages down there. But now you can't cross the border. And they're dying on the vine down there. They've got no revenue. Their only land access to the rest of the states is through Canada. And they have trouble moving anything. They're having to take stuff in by boats. And the whole economy is just imploding.
There are a couple of great YouTube videos on Point Roberts. And one of them, I'm going to call him the mayor, but I could be wrong. He just says we need to be subsumed by Canada. He said this whole COVID situation had just exacerbated a problem which was sometime in the coming. So, Guy, are we going to see a bit of Canadian imperialism where you are swooping down to conquer a bit of the 50 states?
Well, people do say that the country best poised to invade anybody is Canada, because nobody's expecting it.
That's true.
Van de Graaff, did you also do a video on the situation between Bangladesh and India and the mess there, which I know has actually now been cleared up in the last few years? Am I getting you confused?
No, I didn't do a video on Bangladesh and India. Oh, okay. But yeah, that got fixed because they basically traded the exclaves around so they'd be clean up the borders. Mm. I think there's still one particularly large one that they didn't trade.
One of your videos that I quite enjoyed, because I'm a local government nerd, is that the one around the explanation on the Russian Federation and how different parts of what we call Russia have different statuses, and that kind of that sort of goes back to sometimes quite bizarre historic issues around the original Soviet republics. How do you research that?
Well, you basically have to learn about Russia generally, and then you kind of have to just try and search for the particulars. The Soviet history is something that I've just been generally interested in. So, like when I was a kid, I learned the entire history of the Soviet Union because I was interested in communism. The evolution is usually an outgrowth from the Soviet Union. Like before, Russia was the empire, but then the Soviet Union came along, and I think it's called Korenstantia. And what they did was they tried to de-imperialize without giving up any territory, which didn't really work. See, Imperial China, Imperial Russia, they're both, we're anti-imperialists, but then they end up fighting over the same things anyway. Geopolitics, you can't ignore it, no matter how hard you try. They attempted to de-imperialize without giving up any territory. They still lost some territories anyway. Like, for instance, Finland used to be part of. They tried to localize the control, so instead of Russians controlling it, they would say that it's not Russians controlling it, it's the local Uzbeks controlling it. But you didn't have any choice in the matter. The Uzbeks had to follow the party line, so it was still the same thing anyway. But Russia continued this from the Soviet Union, and that's how the republics came to be. And the other things, the Jewish Atomic Oblast was very interesting, because it's just like, there's nobody actually, there's very few Jews who actually live there.
Yeah. And there was even a German Soviet, not republic, but oblast as well before the Second World War. I just found these things utterly, utterly fascinating. I think it was Stalin that had the, as you're kind of alluding to, had this whole concept that the periphery republics would all be non-Russian. So that's the reason why we have Moldova and the Ukraine, which is obviously now Ukraine and Belarus and Georgia and Armenia. But core was still the Russian Federation. So it's a case of if Russia ever got invaded, they'd go through these other republics first under the guise of giving them kind of autonomy. Coming back to exclaves and enclaves, you have Armenia and Azerbaijan, don't they? Both have exclaves in each other's territories, which is another hangover of this weird
Yeah, Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and all those stands, they have similar situations where the Soviet, Stalin specifically, would trade territory back and forth between them. It would kind of break them up. And that made it difficult for any one group to really obtain enough control to really stand against Soviet authority. Mm. The very large exclave that Azerbaijan has, that comes from the fact that the Ottomans and the Safavids, who were the ones who controlled the Iranian plateau at the time, in the early modern period, 1500, 1600, that time, they were always fighting for each other, which is the thing that actually goes back to the Romans and the Parthians. There would usually be an Eastern Mediterranean power and an Iranian plateau power, and they would just constantly fight each other. And they've been doing that for like over 1,000 years. It's called Nakhchivan or something.
Yeah.
But it's a part of Azerbaijan that is disconnected. So that was the border territory. And so what the Safavids did, they basically told everyone that they had to leave. So they depopulated the entire place and sent them all to live in the capital area, which means there's actually a very large Armenian community in what the city that was the capital of the Iranian state at that time. Mm-hmm. The first people to resettle the area were Turkics. So that's how it became majority Turkic. Like, the Armenians were allowed to return eventually, but since the Turks got there first, they were the ones who were the most there. That's how that part got there. The other part is the thing that Armenian or Azerbaijan are actually fighting over, which is, I forget what it's called.
Nagorno-Karabakh.
Yes, Nagorno-Karabakh. And that was more the Soviet policy of trying to split things up.
Mm. It's amazing when you look back at the mess that was the Soviet Union and its internal borders, which arguably under Soviet rule, the fact that there were these exclaves and enclaves and weird borders, it didn't really matter. That when that country ceased being one unified state, that there hasn't been more conflict. Yes, there's been a war over Nagorno-Karabakh. There's been at least two, if not three. We have the situation of the Crimea, which was majority Russian, but within the Republic of the Ukraine, and then Putin grabbed it some eight years ago. But there is also another reason why borders change, isn't there? It's because a lot of borders are along the line of rivers, and rivers can decide to change their course. Then all of a sudden you have anomalies along border rivers. So could you give us some examples of that?
One example is the Colorado River, which doesn't exist anymore. So the river that was your border is no longer a river.
And of course, the Mississippi is famed for changing its course, isn't it? So you have these weird anomalies where over just the space of a couple of hundred years, borders of American states have these anomalies where there's a bit of another state on the wrong side of what is now the river. But which is, and the reason why I know that is because not only am I a map nerd, but because Claire Asprey has done some quiz questions, and I might have given the game away as to the answer for one of those questions. But so if you've got paper and pen, or even a pencil and paper to hand, it is time for the Map Corner quiz, folks. And I know that Ken McDonald is a keen participant in the said quiz. Andy Gladwell has won before, but my money's actually on Guy Smith. We haven't had a Canadian actually win the Map Corner quiz. Let this be the first time, sir. So, borders. Name the country which borders the following countries. Van de Graaff, I expect you to be playing along as well, sir.
I'm Canadian, so maybe.
Well, there you go.
So Canada's got a very good chance of winning this
time. Throwing the gauntlet down to Mel Guy Smith.
Right. Name the country which borders the following countries: Iran, Afghanistan, India, and China. Which country borders Iran, Afghanistan, India, and China? Question number one. Question number two. Name the country which borders the following countries: Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, Bolivia, and Chile. Which country borders Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, Bolivia, and Chile? Name the country which borders the following: Russia, Sweden, and Norway. And if you've been paying attention, this country has been mentioned by Van de Graaff.
And is probably on the map that's on the screen right now.
It absolutely is. Though, if you look at this map, it was a constituent part of another kingdom at this time. Another clue, it only became independent in 1918. Istanbul, probably the most fascinating city I've ever been to. How much of Istanbul's population live in Europe? Is it A, one third, B, one half, or C, two thirds? Istanbul, like the country it sits in, is in two continents. How much of Istanbul's population live in Europe? Is it one third, one half, or is it two thirds? Istanbul. Again, which name was Istanbul not known by? People with eagle eyes will have seen that I had the screen on the answer for this as we clicked over. Persepolis, Byzantium, or Constantinople? Which of these names has Istanbul not been known by in its 2,000 years worth of history? Persepolis, Byzantium, or Constantinople? US state borders. Considering that Thomas Jefferson, the third president, said that all states should be square and rational, it's amazing how much messiness there actually is in US state borders when you look on the micro level. Why is Ellis Island partly in New York and New Jersey? Is it because it crosses a line of longitude? B, it was jointly funded by both states, or is it C, because it was partly made on reclaimed land? Ellis Island, we've all heard of it, famously part of American myth where immigrants came from the far-flung bits of Europe and were given Anglo-sized surnames if the immigration officer couldn't pronounce them. Ellis Island. Why does it have borders in New York State and New Jersey? Is it because it crosses a line of longitude? Is it because it was jointly funded by both states? Or is it C, it was partly made on reclaimed land? US state borders again. Right. I might have given the game away with this one, me with my big mouth. Why is the airport of Missouri City of the Missourian city of St. Joseph cut off and inside Kansas? A, a flood moved the line of the river. B, Kansas lobbied for the airport to be in their jurisdiction. Or C, surveyors reviewed the official border in 1952. And the last question is, again, US state borders. How was the Pig War resolved, which determined the ownership of the islands? The pigs were raced through the street. Was it B, there was a wrestling competition? Or was it C, Germany decided which country should have ownership of the islands? So the Pig War was between Canada and America. How was ownership of the islands determined? Was it the pigs were raced through a street? B, there was a wrestling competition? Or C, the parties involved said, "Oi, Germany, can you adjudicate?" There are your map corner questions. In the chat, Jennifer Prather said, this reminds me of the very vague geographical category of the American Midwest. And I believe, Jennifer, you're referring to notions of the Middle East and the fact that that has moved over time. I know that if you look at an old map of America by the time of the 13 colonies became independent, the West was now the Midwest, wasn't it? What is now the Midwest, they weren't even states, they were territories, barely under the jurisdiction, really, of the 13 colonies. But that was the West. Did you do any work specifically, other than the Van de Graaff, the work that you did around Silicon Valley, Greater San Francisco, the Bay Area? Are there any other bits of America which have these overlaying labels, ditto like the American Midwest, and how that shifted throughout time?
They could probably do a concept like that around New York. Something that's interesting is that New York is a city that covers, the boroughs are each individual counties. So the city of New York is actually above the level of a county, as in it contains multiple counties. So that would be an interesting video that you could try to explain.
So how comes you haven't done that one yet then?
It takes a really long time to make the videos, and my brain just decides what I focus on, and I can't control that.
Well, I'm sure you've got great powers of attention than me, sir. I'm famously somebody with a short attention span.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
But what we do need to do is go to a video, an audio postcard from somebody who has got a much longer attention span than myself and Van de Graaff. It's Ken MacDonald, and it's his audio postcard. This is The Road to Nowhere.
I moved to North Carolina when I was 25 in 1987. It didn't take me long to discover its natural wonders, and in particular the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which lies astride the NC-Tennessee state line. Though I came from a family that didn't go camping and I'd never hoisted a backpack in my life, I soon found myself with rented gear at a mountaintop trailhead, pushing through the wet laurel and spruce to begin a planned two-night, three-day outing. I had no idea where I was, what I was doing. I was wearing cheap tennis shoes. I was carrying over 2 gallons of water, not knowing how to find or purify the plentiful water in the park. And worst of all, my only map was the little one for making backcountry site reservations with the Park Service. It wasn't a proper topo map at all. As a result, when I planned my loop hike, I had no idea I'd be literally losing thousands of feet in elevation the first day, only to gain it back the second. Or that some of the trails I was taking weren't maintained or even marked with blazes. When I finally made it to an Appalachian trail shelter on my second night out, the experienced hikers I met there looked at me with a wonder that could have been best expressed as, "Why aren't you dead?" I became an experienced backpacker in time, but I retained a fond memory for that first mountain hike, including the wilderness area on the north shore of Fontana Lake, where I pitched my tent that first night out. That made it all the more upsetting when I learned that one of our United States senators, Jesse Helms, was advocating for a road to be built through that wilderness, as was the local congressman, Charles Taylor. Officially known as Lakeshore Drive, it was better known for the 6-mile stretch already built as the Road to Nowhere. By the time I learned of the Road to Nowhere in the 1990s, the motivations to build it were largely tourism-related, particularly for the town of Bryson City on the eastern end. There's only one through road in the Smokies, U.S. Route 441, which connects the towns of Cherokee, N.C. and Gatlinburg, Tennessee, both of which have become tourist meccas. So this could be another, some folks thought. But the original reasons were quite different. The Tennessee Valley Authority, one of FDR's public works projects of the Great Depression, had long had their eye on this neck of the woods along the Little Tennessee River. The TVA was building dams all over the region for both flood control and energy production, the latter particularly to support the aluminum industry. However, they couldn't get funding for a dam on the Little Tennessee until December 1941, when the United States entered World War II and suddenly needed a lot more aluminum for war plans. The dam they built created Fontana Lake, which separated many people in Swain County, N.C. from their ancestral lands. Those lands were now part of the national park, but they still had family cemeteries there that were much harder to reach now. The Park Service was supposed to replace the old road that had been flooded out, and thus the Road to Nowhere was born. Though planning began in the 1940s, by the 1970s only around 6 miles had been built, dead-ending right after passing through a tunnel on the Bryson City side. Turns out this was a terrible place to build a road. The old road went through the Little Tennessee Valley, but that was now underwater. The new route had to go through rugged mountain terrain, which was not only expensive, but it was also causing erosion that threatened the local fishery, which was one of the main drivers of the local tourism industry. For me, though, there was another factor. In the 1990s, American environmental activist Dave Foreman began promoting the idea of big wilderness, which he defined as roadless areas of 100,000 acres or more west of the Mississippi, or 50,000 acres or more in the east. There are a number of areas in that latter category, but very few in the east that would meet the western criterion. Two of the few, side by side, are the two halves of the Great Smoky Mountain National Park on either side of U.S. Route 441, totaling over 500,000 acres. I was pleased and proud to have these in my backyard and hated the idea of cutting another road through that wilderness. In the end, Jesse Helms retired from the Senate and Charles Taylor was replaced by Heath Shuler in Congress. With the chief road advocates gone, Shuler was able to midwife a final cash settlement between the federal government and Swain County in 2010, compensating them for their lost road. This was followed by some legal wrangling over the payment schedule, but the final payment was made and the matter settled in 2018. What they are left with is the road to nowhere, which itself has become a tourist destination. In November 2020, my wife and I came to Bryson City in Swain County to take our drive on the road to nowhere. The city seems to be doing quite well, even without a through road across the park. It has two breweries, one of which we visited, taking a pint outside for proper social distancing. There is an excursion railroad, plenty of restaurants and shops, and, of course, easy access to the Smokies backcountry courtesy of that six-mile cul-de-sac. It may be a road to nowhere, but the views are beautiful along the way. Near the end, there's a parking area, a barricade, and then a few hundred feet more of roadway that you can travel only on foot. Mostly, it's a walk through a tunnel, which has become an extensive canvas for graffiti. On the other side, you can readily get on several backcountry footpaths, including Lakeshore Trail, which follows the intended route of the on-built road, and Forney Creek Trail, one of the footpaths I took on my first visit to the park all those years ago.
Ken McDonald, as always, you've knocked the ball out the park, sir. Van de Graaff, where do you stand with France in terms of geographic peculiarities? Because technically France has a border with Brazil.
And then France has also a lot of exclaves.
Yes, exactly. And also France has a maritime border with Canada. It's literally, you know, you throw a stone from Canada into France. You know, the island of Saint-Pierre and Miquelon has a couple of French senators. You know, it is a part of metropolitan France. So where do you stand with kind of geographic peculiarities like that? Do you say, oh, they're all part of this wonderful world of exclaves and enclaves? You just say, oh, the French are cheating there, really. France isn't in South America.
It's sort of like one of those things where I kind of just ignore it because it's like, yeah, they're cheating. It's not real. It's like, that's not really. I just kind of block it out from my mind and I don't think about it.
I'm kind of with you on this, right? But let's get into some geographic weeds here now. So Spain has two cities on the North African coast.
Melilla and Ceuta.
And there's even a third bit, which is a fort, which I don't think anybody actually lives in, but that's on the Moroccan coast.
I think we're about to lose Guy Smith.
I know, there's been an emergency.
Oh, wow. Drama, folks. Look at that guy.
They are. Sorry, yeah, I gotta go. There's the homeless camp in Abbotsford, apparently. There we go. It's been a slice. You'll never find out how badly I beat you in the quiz.
Well, you're laughing. I'll tell you what, go on to the Facebook page.
I'm not writing the answers down.
No, go on to the Facebook page. Give us your answers and we'll tell you if you've won. Because it's a great honour for winning. But listen, Guy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. All right.
Take care.
How dramatic was that? Real drama on Map Corner. Who would have thought it? Right. Who would have thought it? We have real heroism live on the podcast. So, all right. So here we go. French Guiana or Guiana, however you want to pronounce it, in South America isn't a part of metropolitan France, although legally is. The two islands in the North Atlantic with the maritime border with Canada. They're kind of cheating. Right. So, are the Spanish cheating when they say there are two Spanish cities in the continent of Africa?
Well, you can think of it like that water, that if something is separated by water, you can kind of think of it just as like that it's kind of connected, if you think about it in a weird way, that if the water is part of the country, you can think of it that way. So you can, so if you want to be extremely technical, you can ignore that as not being actually exclaves. But like, for instance, if you have with Croatia, it should, that could be considered an exclave because they are connected by land, but they're prevented from being connected by land because of the
tiny bit. It's Nome. I think it's called Nome, the little bit of Bosnia.
But if you go extremely technical, the parts of Spain in Africa are technically connected to land to the rest of Spain because Afro-Eurasia is one landmass. So, yeah, they're exclaves.
But I think one of the more obvious aspects of that is that Mediterranean as a place and a series of cultures around the Mediterranean evolved when it was much easier to get around the edges of the Mediterranean than it was to go by land anyway. So that bit of North Africa is very close to Spain, and it's probably there's been a whole period of history when it was as easy to go by boat around the Mediterranean as it might have been to traverse the land. So they probably have more in common in terms of territory with southern Spain than other parts of Spain that was, you know, beyond the mountains or whatever. So I think sometimes we forget that sort of early parts of human history, water is a much easier navigable route to places and connects places rather than separates them. Nowadays, we tend to see water borders more as an obvious dividing line, islands, you know, an island mentality. But actually, that wasn't really the case for whole other parts of history, whereas it was much easier to reach places by water than it was, you know, by land.
Yeah, for a while, Britain used to be like part of a North Sea Empire with Denmark and Norway. And then later, it had lots of territories in France. And that was for some fun centuries of conflict with that.
There's one thing we're learning is that like humans' capacity to pick fights with each other over random bits of territory is eternal.
Very true. Now, Claire, I think we should do a little touch of the social so we can start to wind down this podcast. I think Nick Rowworth in particular is getting a little bit hot and bothered about all this exclave and enclave talk, and you need to have a little bit of a lie down afterwards. So, Claire, what's been happening on the socials this month?
Alrighty, so on the Facebook group, the numbers keep going up, and we've had some really interesting chats there. And I think what I find particularly fascinating and a kind of evidence of the general map geekery is that one of the most popular threads this time round was when David Crowther posted a picture of a bit of an Ordnance Survey map in his area, and it prompted some of the most amounts of comments because people just love to chat about the minutiae of maps. Although this one did get a bit distracted by a discussion of all the places in the UK that are called Bottom. Something like this was Drunken Bottom near him, but it got quite quickly into the rude place names. And more recently, it's been quite a lively thread on the dark tourism. No one's allowed to go anywhere much at the moment, or certainly that's my experience because I'm in the UK lockdown. When all this is over, clearly there are plenty of places people will recommend. So you can hear about murder and slavery and war and natural disasters and terrorism. And there's a whole host of tourism locations which you can get your fill of the worst of humanity or random natural events in case you fancy that. But there's been plenty of recommendations from the Matt Corner group on that. Maybe it's just a bit of a dark time and we're all thinking in that way. I'd like to see a more cheerful tourism thread at some point, but maybe I should start that one. We had a fun map on the Twitter feed on at the Map Corner hashtag, which was by Magic Amongos, which was a fairly sort of rough drawn map, but it showed which parts of the UK are closer to London or closer to an other country, which basically just demonstrates that most of the UK is closer to somewhere else than it is to London, mainly Ireland, but also France, Norway and Holland. Some of the picks from the socials, but if you're not there, you can't join in. So if you're listening to this and you want to have part of the conversation, do join the Facebook group or tweet us at hashtag Map Corner. It's always great to see what people contribute.
Now, do you have a map fact of the month? Because I know that Guy Smith in particular is waiting for bated breath for a fact to which he can share with his colleagues at work.
Well, I do have a map fact of the month, and it's one that came to us on Twitter from Dr. Shopflin, who actually is somebody I know, who tweeted about a map showing Uralic languages. And these are languages mainly from the kind of Finns and Scandinavian and sort of very Northern Europe. But it basically demonstrated that Hungarian is one of those languages, but it's miles from anywhere else. And it's that its nearest language neighbours are sort of way off in Northern Russia, in Central Russia. So Hungarian is a bit of an anomaly language, that its closest language relatives are a really long way away, and you've got to hop all sorts of other languages to find anything like it. Language maps are always an interesting one, and I love a bit of a language anomaly, and Hungarian is one.
Mm. Right. I know you're waiting with bated breath, and Guy Smith is back. You've rescued that person in record time, Guy.
We got cancelled. They're either too dead or not dead enough. We need them just in that sweet spot, right in the middle.
Well, let's hope they're not dead enough. Do you know what I mean? All right. Thank you for injecting not only drama, but now humour into the show today, sir. You need to come back every week. Right. Answers to the quiz. The honour of winning this quiz is incredibly prestigious. So let's go for it. Borders. Name the country which borders the following countries, and let's go through them. It was Iran, Afghanistan, India and China. And the answer is Pakistan. The next question was, name the country which borders the following countries: Ecuador, Colombia, Brazil, Bolivia and Chile. And the answer is, anybody know? Want to wave? Peru. Peru is the answer. Again on borders, name the country which borders the following other countries: Russia, Sweden and Norway. Anybody want to hazard a guess? Andy Gladwell, looking at you, sir. Unmute yourself. Have a guess. Have a go.
I'll have to guess Finland.
Yeah, you guessed correctly, sir. Well done. Istanbul. How much of Istanbul's population lives in Europe? Anybody want to hazard a guess? Hold your hand up. Go for it. Unmute yourself and just blurt it out. Guy Smith, do you want to have a go?
2/3.
You're absolutely correct, sir. It is 2/3.
Woo!
Istanbul again. By which name is Istanbul not known in its 2,000 plus years worth of history? And the answer is, anybody know? Just unmute yourself and go for it.
Persepolis.
Yes, it's not been known by that name. Well done. State borders. Why is Ellis Island partly in New York and New Jersey? And if you actually see a map of this, it's kind of crazy. It's bits all over the place. William Lim, you've unmuted yourself. You know, don't you? Go for it. Give us the answer.
I live in New Jersey, but I have to know this. It's partly made on reclaimed land.
Boom. Well done, sir. Next question, US state borders again. And I gave this one away because my mouth just ran away with me. But why is the airport of the Missouri city of St. Joseph cut off and inside Kansas? And the answer is, Nick Roworth, unmute yourself. Give us the answer.
To be a flood, move the line.
Yay, well done. The line of the river is moved because of a flood. And US state borders again. And I might have got this one slightly wrong. I thought Pig Island was between the US and Canada, but this is a US. I was right then. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Near where we were talking about, actually.
Yeah. How was ownership of the islands determined? And I will tell you this, because I kind of did know this. It was given to arbitration to, I believe, the Kaiser. It was Germany decided.
I'd like to interject and say that it was still technically Prussia at that time period.
Yeah, that is true.
Well done. Well done,
it's
you.
It's that I called it Germany in the audio, but then I caught a mistake later, so I put a little note of it.
But wasn't it Kaiser Wilhelm II that adjudicated?
At the time when it was decided, it was still technically called Prussia and not Germany yet.
Okay, all right. So Wilhelm I, then.
We didn't have a race of pigs. I think pigs racing through the street, I don't see why we can't solve all border disputes in that way. it wouldn't be any less nonsensical than other things sometimes.
Right. So, folks, the question is, there were 9 questions, and I'm putting you all on gallery view now.
I think it was easier this month. Again, I was getting a reputation for baking 2 difficult quizzes. So I'm hoping that this time someone's got full marks.
Who got all of those correct? Hold a hand up.
Yay!
William, props to you, sir. I must admit, I only got one of those wrong, and it was a guess. We believe you. It's an honor system. Don't even have to hold your piece of paper up, William. So, William, guess what you win?
I have to make another postcard.
You do. So is it not going to be Edison? It can't be Edison, New Jersey. Oh, I suppose it could, but it needs to be somewhat. Can't be back the whole city because you've done that. But I'll leave you to think about that. Guy Smith, how was your first time watching Map Corner go out live? How was it for you, sir?
It was very entertaining. I like it. And a question about the San Juan Islands that I fly over all the time. They're directly between Vancouver and Victoria.
Ah.
The Pig Wars.
Van de Graaff, do you know why were they called the Pig Wars? Because I didn't pick that up, and I don't know if you know.
Oh, it's because some guy shot a pig, and that's what fought
long. Oh, that's right.
Well, usually what happens when there's a border dispute is people ignore it until, like, there's some legal issue where it suddenly becomes important which jurisdiction you're in. And then it's that legal issue that launches the territory dispute. Because if people can avoid dealing with problems, they kind of just shift it down until they can't.
Yeah.
So somebody shot somebody's pig, and that's what brought the legal issue into the forefront, which made them have to decide.
Okay. But they should have just raced pigs through the streets. That would have been, you know. I'm standing by that.
So there were streets on the island then, Claire?
I don't know. Maybe.
Right. There's a hole in your answer there. All right, Claire, very lastly, is there anything else that we need to do, or can we fold up our maps?
Well, I wanted to ask Jennifer where she thinks the Midwest is, but that's slightly diverging from a previous conversation, so I won't do that. I just want to remind people that our next recording is the 6th of March and at the usual time, and we will be interviewing Rudyard from What Alternative History, another opportunity to look at geography and history together, which is becoming a bit of a theme for us, but then that's what we like.
And he's also, like you, Guy, and you, Van de Graaff, a Canadian. So a lot of you about at the moment. Blimey now. Van de Graaff, thank you for coming on to the show, sir. When are we going to see a new video from you? Well, I'll leave you to think about that, shall I? Right. But we're waiting. Listen, everybody, thank you for being part of another stunningly exciting and gripping episode of Map Corner. We had real life drama. And Andy Gladwin accused me of bullying. And then we've had international sea rescue almost be attempted live on Map Corner. It doesn't get any more exciting than this on a Saturday, does it, folks? Claire, can we fold up our maps now?
We can fold up our maps now, Royfield.
To do, everybody. Take care. And as Sarah Spilsby would say, ta-ra a bit. Bye-bye. Oh, thank you, everybody. That was lovely.
Thanks, Van Graaff.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.